I'll be taking notes. I'll write everything down.
I may jot a couple things down as well as the discussion goes. So good morning, everyone. So we'll be in here for 15 minutes. We'll look for Gene's prompts as we get close. We'll see. I think it's she's got an hour up on the board up there, but now. Anyway, so the discussion today is priorities for delivery, service priorities for delivery 2022. To be honest, in my 8 years aboard here, or coming up on my eighth year, it isn't the most exciting, transformative type of service. It's essentially the same when I started as it is now, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't have places to look to improve upon in primarily the categories of safety, efficiency, and accuracy or quality. So I'm hoping to generate some discussion. It doesn't often come to pass that much. We've had these discussions somewhat in our delivery committee. So just hoping that you've got some ideas, some things to look for, and I can sort of kick things off. Earlier mentioning the sorter is certainly on our list as we embark on that investigation. So in a new building also, you know, we'll be considering where we are in 2022. We've got the Marathon County possibility for next year as well. In addition to that, just looking for things that could improve our efficiency, how we get in and out of your locations. Again, like safety, you know, we handle hundreds and hundreds of bins a day. Libraries are doing the same on their end. Can we do things in a much more efficient manner? I'll give you one idea, like right off the top, and that is, do we have room for examining exactly how delivery appears to you? One idea that we've tossed around in our delivery discussions, this is at our facility, is can we have an actual moving cart that actually becomes your delivery instead of a bin? This might be library dependent on volume. So you would get the entire delivery all contained in a cart of sorts, minus bins, just to improve efficiency, in and out type of thing, have it manufactured for us to our specifications with feedback from libraries. That's just like one type of idea. But I'm looking for anything you may have. So I guess I'll open the floor a little bit here.
I don't know if this should count because it was already talked about, but I'm really excited about the sorter idea.
Right.
And probably more than some other libraries because we have one and I know how much we depend on it. We had to detach it from our drive-up book drop for the pandemic and we're really missing it. So it's kind of spelled out for us just how efficient it makes us. So I'm real happy. And the thought of not having yellow post-it notes makes me more excited than it should. So I would say go forward with that idea.
All right. Yes. And Wendy, on that note, because you are a sorter library, we'd certainly like to work with you, pay a visit to you and see how it operates and how we might be able to incorporate that technology into this greater effort, like I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I will say when so it was on the dock to be purchased before I got here. But my understanding of how a sorter was supposed to work was not at all what actually happened about how it does work. So just knowing sort of what the possibilities are.
Are you saying that's like you were surprised by the capabilities it did have, or was it oversold?
I really thought we would be able to sort more finely than we can. It's what we found, and it's going to be totally different for delivery because you're touching all the different libraries. For us, I really thought we could sort into like everything that needs to go to Madison can just go right into a red bin, and it's not at all. It sorts very well for inside our building, but then we have a lot of exceptions to go through. I think you'll have a totally different setup, and you know more about sorters now than I did when I started. So I may have been had some false expectations, but yeah.
Gotcha. Another idea, too, is that while I've extolled the virtues of our staff and how efficient we've come to pass after many, many years of doing this, I do feel like we have more efficiencies that we can make. And one of those is in the route makeup, like who is on particular routes, who you're paired with and things like that. So maybe that's another thought that you all can consider in this forum too. Can we achieve some efficiencies just by linking libraries differently on a delivery route?
Well, this is Debbie from Portage. I having come from Sun Prairie, where we did have a sorter, I also would say that the virtues of having a sorter at delivery have some appeal to me as well. I'm not sure about your process, but I can't imagine that it wouldn't improve the process for libraries on the other end. Those post-it notes and just being able to send things out without having to worry about it, knowing that on your end, you'll just run it through a sorter, sounds really appealing to me as well.
Great. Yeah, Debbie, I think the focus is really on all of your unique processes, from large libraries to small ones, how much we can improve upon that. In one of our delivery committee meetings, some of the smaller libraries, I think, felt there really wasn't going to be a difference. And that's understandable if they're only dealing with half a basket or even one basket. But yeah, when you start to multiply that, what we wheel into you guys at Portage certainly can have a big impact. And I think that's where we're going to see that improvement.
Absolutely. As far as the people that are coming, and I'm just glad you're back to full steam. We missed you last year, and I have no complaints about anything that you guys have been doing.
Great. Thank you, Debbie.
Agreed.
Hi, it's Roxanne from Rio. Obviously, Rio doesn't need a sorter. If we did it, it'd have one bin. but I come from two different libraries that had sorters, and they make a difference. They are increase efficiency, help with, you know, the exception bin is a pain in the butt, but on the other hand, it also points out all our problems, and where a lot of times we're not doing something right when we're tagging or entering an item into the catalog. So it helps improve that. And I know when I worked at Milwaukee Public Library, when they first went into the sorter, so I got to hear a lot of that discussion, and everybody worried they were going to lose their jobs. Well, they didn't. They just became more efficient in getting the books out and either transferred back to their original library if they were dropped at the central location, or faster back to the shelves. So there wasn't a matter of people losing their jobs. And I'm wondering if you've thought about like a virtual tour of either like a Chicago Public Library or a New York who do handle massive volumes with, you know, that kind of thing. I know what, because I mean, I worked at the Central Library location and, you know, watching what that sorter does, but the books weren't put on the belt by hand by the staff. They came through the Dropbox, the drop slot, or a Dropbox was attached and it slowly lifted up and the books tumbled down onto the belt. And that was the same thing at Manitowoc Public Library. We didn't hand put every book on the belt by hand. It was from the Dropbox. So there wasn't, have to worry about it being just so. You know, when you drop something out of a bucket, it figured itself out. Because there was, at Manitowoc, they have like little hills. So it would sort them into single lines just by rolling down.
Gotcha. Yeah, the Racine sorter had sort of a similar setup. There was a wing that had it was coming from the book drop. So yes, there was more of a batch you could throw into it, and it would sort of piece those things out automatically, like you're saying. Yes, viewing something that is to scale with South Central is something I'm interested in doing. Like you mentioned, New York, King County was another one. I know we've done this process before I got to SCLS a number of years ago, where a lot of that stuff was evaluated. So yeah, I would like to see some other operations of our size, because we are a massive, given our population and our footprint in Wisconsin and the behaviors of our patrons and our members. It's very similar to those large operations.
Corey, another one you might think about is Columbus Metro in Ohio.
Okay.
They have a sorter that's in an operation center. So kind of more similar to, I think, what you'd be looking at putting it in the South Central building. Their gotcha. Volume is much higher than anything we see in Wisconsin, but they have, I think, probably a similar number of locations to go to.
Great. About 3.5 minutes left.
That's good to know. Marty, I don't know how much you know about Columbus.
Quick, I want to hear about this bin that would take away the baskets.
Yeah, this is, I think it would be for larger libraries. Just a conception that we've had myself. To just sort of have a larger type hopper to sort into at our location. It would go right to you. You would do the same, therefore eliminating the need for a lot of additional baskets. So it would create more volume, maybe have that spring-loaded thing like you have for your book drop. So that it would weight down with more items. We could seal it off to the weather a little bit better. We've got a manufacturer making our carts for us as we speak, and perhaps they could put something together and we could try this out in a few targeted locations.
I think people would appreciate not lifting boxes as much.
Yeah,
that seems like a huge benefit of that potentially. We certainly have some staff that are like, that's not a task that they're able to do very much, is lifting the buckets, right? And so, so that would be a huge benefit if we can cut down on that, as long as the solution isn't, of course, worse than the problem we're trying to fix.
Exactly. Mark, I'm glad you chimed in a little bit here too. I guess the question I'd have for you and anyone else at MPL is the sorter technology something that's ongoing, evaluated within MPL as well?
Well, yeah, we looked at it. We looked at it as part of the Penny development. And as you know, we decided against it.
Right.
So that's really the most I can say about it, is that, we continue to look at it every time we build a new big project. We looked at it with Central, we looked at it with Penny. I think they looked at it with Sequoia. And each time we came to this same conclusion that it's not the best solution for us. We're a different operation though, obviously, than delivery. But those trade-offs, in particular, the trade-offs in terms of space and other things we can do, like those are big factors, right? Like this is coming away from the public. And then maybe that's gonna look a little different for SCLS. So they're a bit of apples and oranges there.
Yeah.
We're not anti-sorter. We just haven't found it to be the right solution for us.
Understood. Well, we're getting short on time here. I think we got maybe about a minute or so. Are there any other thoughts, conversation?
You guys will stay put. We will be jerked out of here. So just stay put.
All right. Bye, jerks. Thanks.
We haven't got, there's the prompt. No, not yet. I moved my cursor. Yeah, for MPL, Mark, I think those libraries for us would be one of those targets, the high volume thing we would employ.
Okay, there it is. There's our prompt.
Okay. Thanks. You've done a great job during the pandemic.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate your feedback.
I'm here to facilitate and I guess sort of answer some questions along with Carrie. Carrie is recording today, and I asked her to help answer questions because she's the expert and I'm not. But hopefully today what we're doing is hearing from you what you might see as requests for new services for 2020. And this kind of falls into two paths. One is free and easy and cheap that you know, we could, you know, explore differently, or if there's a cost to it, we need to start talking about it sooner rather than later to see if we can work it into the 2022 budget. So that's why we're doing this in March. So I will turn it over to you. Do you guys have ideas for technology services that you would like to see us explore for 2022?
I'll say I'm really excited to see that app come. I think that's first and foremost of what we'd like to see happen. I'll also say it's really hard to think about new projects right now because we're all just trying to like figure out how to get reopened and go back to normal. So I don't have any big projects in mind at the moment.
Is there anything that you're thinking about for the reopenings in the future that technology could help with?
I don't know where this would belong. One of the things that came up in my board meeting last night was just the idea that people are loving curbside pickup so much. And I don't know how that's going to shift when we reopen. But if there are people that really want to continue that, I know that they do pickup lockers. I've worked at a library that had pickup lockers. I assume there would be a technology element to that, but also obviously facility, just I think trying to build them into somewhere. The ones we had at my last library opened on the inside of the building so you could fill them from there and not go outside. So it's something that's, I mean, I think they're ungodly expensive, so probably not really happening, but kind of an idea that we were throwing around.
There'd certainly be a ILS authentication component to it. That's probably the most most prominent part of this.
Okay.
Anything else?
Well, at Portage, one of the things that I've been thinking about in terms of that grant money, because last year we got to piggyback on what the city got. And really, well, we got our self-checks and we got a number of different things. So one of the things I was thinking with this year and the opportunity of those grants would be a children's database, because the awe machines that we were thinking of upgrading may not be the most appropriate because of the transmission of the disease, but a database, an awesome database that we probably would consider a luxury, might be a better solution. And it might be something that if we could get more people involved, would lower the cost for everyone. I don't know, it's not a one-time cost, so I'm not sure.
Sorry.
No problem. It's not a one-time cost, but I was thinking about that as a way of encouraging less interaction between staff and patrons.
I'll also say the AWU machines are really expensive and they break really easy. I would love a different solution for those. Every time I had to replace them, I wish there was something better to do.
Gary, do you have any follow-up questions on that topic?
I was just wondering if you had any children's databases in mind.
I knew you were going to ask that.
And you don't have to.
I watched something on wills last year. And I've got the paperwork, but it will take me a while to dig it out. But yes, I did. And it was something that you could use from home, too. So that would also be kind of nice with people who are still reluctant to come into the building. I can get that information for you, but it was just something that I'm putting together my list since we've got potential grant money again. And if it needs to be something that is sort of related to pandemics and trying to make smart decisions, that was one that came to mind.
Okay. And the database coordination is usually done through wills. So we wouldn't necessarily need to know which one, but we would want to make sure that it would authenticate well. So,
okay.
This is Mark from Madison. So no particular project, anything in mind, but just as a general thing, like the city is talking more about, as I think a lot of employers are, about telework going forward and how this is being supported and what policies are going to be like. And for many of our staff, I think that is also going to potentially mean SELS computing, possibly, or could. So it's just a thing to think about in terms of like, because I know some of that was able to be done, but it's like, it's not ideal with staff taking an SELS laptop and using that for their telework here and there. So I don't know if that's going to increase, you know, it, for us at the city, we also have city machines and all that, but we really prefer SELS in almost every circumstance. So as you look at stuff, that's a thing to keep in mind.
So I actually had missed the first word, but so support for telework?
Yeah. Ongoing support for telework and, you know, how do you keep those machines updated and, you know, like make that more sustainable from your end? Cause I know it's a huge challenge. You know, like it would be something that would be a good option, I think, for more people going forward. And I think telework is going to become a much more normalized part of the world. How we figure out how to still do that and staff our libraries is like the question of the day and of next week, and we'll be going forward. But I think there's still going to be cases where we're really going to want to do it.
Hi, it's Roxanne from Rio.
Hey, Roxanne.
Couple things. I've noticed our ancestry.com isn't being used, but it's only because it's in the library, and I know our people that use it are still hesitant to come into the library. Is there any way in the future it could be they call us for a code or something? I don't know if it's even possible and if the cost would be prohibitive. I know that it can get pricey. My second question is hotspots. Like, I've looked at them for in Rio, but we're really limited to US Cellular, and the price was like just off the hook. And I don't know if there's anything we can do, but I would like to at least try to do that. I think the biggest thing right now we're starting to see is streaming is gonna start hurting us, because, you know, DVDs are one of our bigger checkouts, but as our library users, you know, are leaving us because they're older and they're not adopters of technology, but the younger people that are coming in are. And I don't know if like a Netflix, a Hulu, HBO Max. Okay. And I think that's more on a national level, is how do we see if they would do a library subscription? So we could, okay, you know, let it check out for 2 weeks kind of thing, or 3 weeks, whatever it is. And I don't even know if it's possible.
So Ancestry is one in their mobile hotspots. And I want to say really quickly that E-rate grant that they're talking about with the, whatever the new act is, it would pay for mobile hotspots, but you have to filter in the library. So that's the way it is, but it's something to consider, and we can talk about filtering more in the future, certainly, but I just wanted to put that out there. So we have 5 minutes left, sounds like. Okay, so then what was the last thing, Carrie?
It was Ancestry, and Ancestry should be available to Rio patrons from outside the library, and so we will follow up with Roxanne with the information that you'd need to know to make that happen.
Okay, because like I've been told they can only get onto it in the library. So I don't know where the disconnect is.
Yeah, we'll contact you, and I'm pretty sure we'll want to test it first, but I'm 99% sure that that should be a possibility.
And Vicki, you know, the mobile hotspots for us are going to wait till next year. You know, I have something big on my plate right now anyway.
Yes, of course. Right. And this grant, I think the grant funds and E-rate will be years. I want to say that $7 billion is for a number of years. It doesn't need to be done right away, but it's just something to keep in mind. And of course, we're redoing our filtering here too. So that's all very long term. But I just wanted to throw that out there that that is one way to help with the costs. I remember the last thing. So like a streaming service for to replace DVDs. I think Hoopla is one option, and some of our libraries do use Hoopla. So in fact, Debbie, did Sun Prairie use Hoopla?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And it, like, this is something I know very little about, but you know,
another option, we don't have Hoopla, but we have 6 Roku devices and we have subscriptions to Netflix and Disney Plus on them. And they check out for 2 weeks at a time. People love them. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So this one kind of falls in the consultant side too. You know, there's going to be, I'm sensing there's crossover amongst all of these groups. So it's on the list. And certainly when we get that funding, you know, maybe we try some things system wide. I can't speak on the database side. I shouldn't even say anything, but I believe there are options out there.
One of the other things I think we're looking at is to improve our reception outside of our building into the parking lot. So I know there's costs attached to that and some complaints about it, but I don't remember exactly what it was.
There are external hotspots. There is a cost. There's a startup cost, and then there's the ongoing network fee for those, but they are available. And again, that grant can be used for that.
Right, exactly.
All right, I'm guessing we're up to our, like up against our time here. It's probably been about 5 minutes. I have not seen, okay. Oh, 2 minutes left. All right. Does anybody have any more ideas? What you've come up with so far has been very interesting.
We should ask your cat.
Oh, yeah. That's the most she's been in a Zoom meeting that I can remember. I have 3 cats. They don't seem to participate very much. So she surprised me. All right. Well, if there's nothing else, I think Carrie and I could probably, Carrie, do you have any additional follow-up that you need? Okay. So maybe Carrie and I will go ahead and get out early. Thanks, everybody. You'll hear a summary later.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
There is no presentation for this. We're going to just, we want to hear your ideas about anything. Primarily, I mean, we're mostly interested in things that have budgetary impact, but we're certainly, we want to hear about any ideas you have about service considerations for the consultant team, anything in the area of marketing, advocacy, legal help, annual report, that sort of thing, graphic design, building design, youth services, inclusive services, you know, access to buildings or accessibility issues, CEs, workforce development work, website, support that we provide, the digitization work that Tamara does, and also the data services that Jody works on. Those are all the things we want to kind of kick around and see if you have any ideas or thoughts on things that we're doing, things you'd like to see us do differently, or things that we're, you know, that we're not doing, ideas that things we could add. So anybody want to jump in and offer anything?
Well, I guess I'll start. I just wanted to thank actually Mark and the work that he's done with Portage here on, I understand it has a name now. It's called the Community Resource Network.
Cool.
Which is a way of putting together, it sounds like to me, a realistic way of putting together people who need support within the community together with those leaders in a way they'll actually work. The workforce development is just one component of that. So.
Yeah. And I think the work Mark, this is Mark Yoakum, not me. That came about as a request from Chris at your library to try and address some workforce development issues locally that were happening. And I think it's, I mentioned this in our last group, I think the work that's going on in Portage right now is going to be a really good model for a lot of other libraries, because the goal has been to really connect the workforce development boards with libraries. And you know, how do you do that? It's, you know, it might be different in every community, but I think Mark is learning some things in Portage about, you know, what libraries need and what the community needs and how do we work, how do we bring people together? And I think it's going to pay off really well. It sounds like it's going to be a really good thing.
I think it'll actually do something, because before it was like, we have to be hands-off. We can't help them. And they can't help themselves because they don't know how to start. So at least putting the two together, it sounds like a fix. And that's kind of what we're in the business of doing. So I'm really thrilled about that.
And as we said in the last group, hopefully there is a proposal in the state budget for an increase in system aid. And obviously if that goes in, we get a certain proportion of that money based on the aid distribution formula. So we're excited about that. We are very aware that, you know, libraries are seeing financing issues, and that we're really being aware that if that happens, we really want to look at options for, you know, using that money to benefit libraries, whether it's, you know, fee reductions or, you know, increased services or whatever. So those will be opportunities if that money comes through to do some more of these kinds of things. But I think it's important, you know, Mark is available to work one-on-one with libraries and, you know, reach out to him, because it's not a one size fits all. Every community is different. And, you know, it does maybe take, I mean, he'll learn things in Portage, but he can't just take what was done in Portage and, you know, plop it onto Partyville and say, okay, here's your thing. And that's the challenge. So. I did share in the last, you know, we will continue our printing services as we have in the past. I know libraries aren't using them a lot right now without a lot of programming going on. You know, libraries really aren't printing very much stuff, but that will continue. We're going to be getting a new copier soon. The newest and greatest just came out, and they're telling us that ours is 4 years old now and we can upgrade to the new version and keep our costs the same. So hopefully what that might mean is they're telling us that the cost per copy is lower on that. So hopefully we'll be able, with the same money, to be able to give libraries an additional quantity of printing in their annual allocation, because it's based on the cost to print copies. So hopefully, even though our cost stays the same, we can give you more printing for each library. So that would be a good thing. Anything that we're anything you'd like to see us do differently or offer, or any ideas for?
This isn't helpful, but I just keep saying this in every group. Like, I think we're so focused on trying to get open that it's really hard to kind of focus on adding stuff or doing new stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, keep in mind, I mean, if you think of things, you know, this afternoon, you go, can't believe I didn't say this or offer, just shoot me an email, you know. Okay. I mean, the budget process is, it's not like we're going to be done with it next week. So there's going to be more opportunities in May at the all directors meeting. But between now and then, you know, if you have ideas or questions or things strike you, just, you know, shoot me or any of us on any of the topics an email. That'll get it into the mix for discussion and consideration. So, yeah, this is not a one-time opportunity. So one of the things that came up at one of our earlier rooms was, you know, whether we're going to continue virtual meeting options, you know, going forward as COVID ends and we get back to whatever more normal looks like. And I think, yes, that's, you know, I think it's, we were starting to do that before COVID. But I think now we have more tools at our disposal, and I think we'll definitely continue that. And another question that came up was, when is SCLS planning to go back to the office? And we've thrown out a date of September. We didn't want to throw, we picked this date a while ago. We didn't want to throw a date out and then, you know, say July and then have to backtrack on it. So we figured it would be easier to pick a date like September and then open earlier because people are vaccinated and things are in better shape. So I think it's a given that staff will have more latitude to work at home more than they did in the past. But that's, you know, there is going to be probably, there's going to be requirements to attend meetings and things like that, and the ability to travel to libraries. But staff might be working at home more than they have in the past. We're in the process right now, although, you know, you can call us anytime and our phones transfer. We are looking at getting rid of our landlines and getting cell phones for staff. So we don't have to do the forwarding to our personal cell phones or home phones. And we think we're going to be able to do it for about the same money that we're doing our phone lines. So we think it's a good alternative and having staff more available regardless of, you know, if they're on the road somewhere, they can still be reachable by libraries. So that's something we're working on right now. So Mark, I got to tell you, when I look at your picture down in the corner, it reminds me a little bit of Hugh Laurie looking at me from down there in the corner. I mean, you're much younger than Hugh Laurie, but there's a look there that.
Yeah, you know, I'm hanging on to this photo as long as I can. I think I've really aged out of it, though.
Have you? Okay.
Oh, yeah. My previous job was at a design college where we had there was a photography program there. So this is a pro shot from 2008, I think.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. Plus, I never really looked like that. I think there's some Photoshop.
Well, we don't ever think we look like we look in our pictures.
Yeah, I'm not going to turn my camera on though. Just all the same.
Okay, that's fine. So anything else? Does anybody have any thoughts or questions or ideas? I know this is kind of it's a bit of an artificial process, but we do want to give you the opportunity. And like I say, it's, you know, feel free if you have something or if you have something you want to talk about individually, feel free to reach out and we can do that. Yeah. One of the other, go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say in general, and I will turn my camera on there. Yeah. Different people, right? In general that, you know, I'm sort of expecting that we've lost some customers in this, and during the pandemic and just the shift to digital has really been given a little boost of steroids through the pandemic. And so for us, as I think forward, I think it's going to mean sort of like more community engagement, more going out of the building to where those who need us most are, and less of just sort of sitting in our facilities, which will continue to still be important, but less of just sort of like sitting there waiting for decreasing numbers to come to us.
Sure.
And use our collections less and use our space less. So that's kind of what I see, especially like, I don't know, in the shorter term, I don't see 100 people, you know, coming into story time, even whenever we're able to immediately offer something like that. So, so for that, that's just, yeah, I don't know, more okay. of the kind of stuff that you've been supporting a lot. And so.
Okay. Well, that's good information though, because I think there are certainly, you know, things we can talk about internally that focus more on those kinds of broad issues, you know, not how do we get more people to come into the library, but how do we help libraries be more effective going out into the community? So, and that kind of crosses over to a lot of different, I mean, into CE programming and website, I mean, and just everything. I mean, that's good information to have.
I think some of these problems that we've long have and that I think aren't unique to libraries of like, how do you hear the voice of the community? How do you reach those who are difficult to reach, right? How do you ascertain community needs? And some of that can be done through analysis of data that's out there and leveraging the work of others. And it often seems like, you know, that work winds up feeling like we're starting from scratch every time we do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really like not necessarily. And so I think sure. like the data dashboard that is going is a really good start, and like getting that, like, here's who's in your community and looking at the ACS data and census data and things like that, making that like really broadly available to all SCLS libraries, I think would be really helpful.
Sure.
So I think good trends there, and more of that would be good.
Cool. We just got a message from Jean. I think she said we had 2 minutes, probably about a minute left before Tamara and I need to leave. Everybody else, stay here and you'll get your last group. I'm not sure which one you're waiting to hear from next, but really appreciate your time, your input. This will help us certainly as we start working on the budget or continue working on it. We've already started. It feels like that's all we do is work on budgets.
You're telling me.
Oh, man.
All right. And I need to go. So bye, everybody.
Thanks, Debbie. All righty. Well, we'll be leaving in just a minute here. So we'll see you all back. Yeah, we'll see you back at the main session when we're done.
Okay. Kind of
share all this out. So. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Mark. Wendy, how's your budget?
Oh, my balcony.
Nice, lucky. I'm Heidi Oliverson. I'm your facilitator for Room 3, and we're here to discuss ILS service priorities for 2022. And just a quick reminder, you are being recorded. So, service priorities. Questions about existing projects?
I think we're all very excited for the app to come along.
Do you want me to share with you what I've shared with other rooms?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Of course.
So, Amy received the test app earlier this month, and we went through a round of testing and identified bugs right away, submitted them, got another round of the fixes, and did another round of testing. And as far as I know, and I there could be more people, I'm not that deep into it. It's Amy, myself, Jean Anderson, and Rose. And I can tell you from my perspective, it's a really nice app. From the patron perspective, I can link other accounts to my record. After I've linked them to my record, I can view their checkouts, their holds, and any of the charges they owe.
theoretically, there's still a couple of bugs. Then also from the patron perspective, I can store my library card as a digital library card, but to access it, I have to have my PIN, which was critical. We really wanted an app that had a security layer. It's been interesting. I mean, I have a set limit of things that I'm testing, but it's so far it's been going well. But yeah, when I say set, it's very narrow. There are a lot of other questions out there that I can't answer. It's got to be answered by Amy. But yeah. And then in conjunction with that, in the 7.0 sandbox, Bibliovation sandbox, there's a new functionality called Patron Group, which is you can link to, so you can have a leader that is linked to a spouse and children. And so far I've only tested this from the staff side. So as a staff person, I could click on the patron group for that patron and tell them, oh yes, your children have 5, 7, and 8 items checked out. They have 0 holds, but one of them owes $2. Nobody else on your, you know, then you can link to, if they want to pay for it right then and there with cash, you could link, click on the link to that patron record and pay, that person can pay in cash. It does not have the functionality that allows the leader to pay all the fines for their group. And I did ask yesterday when we were getting a demonstration from LibLime if that had been included or thought of in the initial development, and she said no, but that does not preclude requesting that in the future. So we'll take it as we get it. So service priorities, are there things that you have talked about that you would like to have, or an enhancement for a service that we already have? You just want to get through the pandemic.
I said this in every group and it's not helpful to anybody, but I feel like we're so focused on just trying to get open again that it's like, it's real hard to think about adding more things or what we don't have, right? It's our focus That's is fine. Kind of laser. Yeah.
I totally agree.
It's not helpful. I know that.
but it is helpful because we need to know that people feel like that. I mean, I've heard that individually from other people. It's like the amount of stress that we're all under is such a, you know, mm-hmm. I don't want to say a monkey because I don't want to insult any monkeys, but it's always riding on our shoulders, and it's really difficult to even think a year ahead after mm-hmm. the year we've had. So
yeah. Something I brought up in an earlier group that they thought would be more ILS, and this is a pipe dream, so I don't think it'll ever happen, but my library board was talking last night about how people love curbside so much that maybe we should look into pickup lockers or something that would go long-term. I think they're ungodly expensive, and I think installing them is also really expensive, so I doubt it's something that we would follow through on, but we might look into it.
So Sue Ann at Reedsburg has been doing investigation into this.
Oh, yeah.
And what they were looking for, though, was more of a low-tech okay. option than uh-huh. what the library vendors are promoting out there.
Uh-huh.
Just because they are exorbitantly expensive.
Yes.
But the low-tech is problematic in its own way in that you want it. It wouldn't necessarily interface with the ILS, which that's okay. the low tech part of it.
Uh-huh.
But you would still have to go out and change the locker combinations every time somebody picked up their materials. And is that worth it in terms of right. efficiency?
Right.
I know that there are library systems in states that have extreme rural areas that have found that those lockers or pickup locations, kind of like red boxes, have been a lower cost option for their patrons than bookmobiles. But it's still very expensive.
Yes. I think I looked at PLA last year at sort of a combination vending machine, but you could also pick up hold. So it could be loaded with like stuff that you just wanted to check out right there, but also you could put your card in and give you your holds.
Yeah.
It was enormous and so expensive that I like just wanted the guy to stop talking.
I know.
About a sorter, so.
I think Biblioteca was demonstrating that one year, and I think Envisionware has the same thing.
I think it was Envisionware.
Yeah. And then I can't remember if TechLogic also has it, but there are a couple of other individual vendors that focus on just a few types of library hardware. So who knows? But I think that probably more libraries are considering investing in something like this because of the pandemic.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see when we have our doors open again, if the demand for curbside just goes away, or, you know, I think there are some people that are going to just want it forever, but.
Yeah.
Well, right.
For sure. I mean, I think a lot of libraries are having this conversation about like, you know, how is there any way to do this? Right. Like I can't wait to, and I'm speaking on behalf of my staff, we can't wait for it to go away as quickly as possible, right? It's so labor intensive.
It's so staff intensive, yeah.
At the same time, like, you know, that's Sequoia, right? And but for smaller operations, rural areas, you know, I could certainly see it being something that I would want to continue to offer to patrons if I could, like, I'd love to do it if we could, you know, scale it.
Yeah.
And so from the ILS perspective, I think that is really like, I don't know, if that was something that would work at my library, I would be asking for that option to be there in, you know, when I am as a patron placing a hold, I want to pick this up curbside, right? And just then, even if that's just a checkbox or whatever it is, and the local library takes it from there versus integration with anything like Kapira or anything like that, that would be a huge thing just to know that, you know, because I don't think any library is going to like say all of our pickups are going to be curbside. Right. So no one's going to want that. Some people still are going to prefer to come in and others are really going to want that option. So I don't know that that's easily done. Right. And certainly I don't want that option there for Sequoia pickups. So.
Well, yeah, if you were going to provide that kind of option, it would have to be at the, you would have to notify the patron to indicate their choice of pickup option at the point of notifying them that the item is at their pickup location. You couldn't do it ahead of time, because if they accidentally picked the wrong pickup location and indicated they wanted curbside at Adams County Library instead of Ashman, that would be problematic.
I guess I was thinking it would be like, well, here's my home library. This is where my holds go, right? So like if my home library is Adams County, then maybe I just indicate that on my record. So anytime a hold comes through for me as, you know, Mark at Adams County, then Adams County knows like, oh, Mark gets his holds that way, right? And then maybe there's just a way to sort of separate that out on the pick list or at some point in the process.
Yeah, I don't. Staff. Yeah, there would definitely have to be something that would be thought through, because the patrons still pick the incorrect pickup location, and B, it probably sounds like it would be global. And if you didn't want a particular library didn't want their patrons to have that option, it would be more difficult to exclude them. So yeah, but that's definitely something. Figure out a way to, if library is going to continue curbside pickup post-pandemic, how could we help them to indicate that? Or not, or prevent certain libraries from being open to that option or eligible for that option.
We did front door pickup even before, but they were for people that had physical disabilities or who we knew were a little bit antisocial. But they would just call us. The rule is, if you want us to run it out front door pickup, call us when you're in the parking lot.
Nice.
Granted, Ryo's a little bit smaller, but when you're the only person working and our phone doesn't work outside, you know, we got to run outside and hopefully they don't want to chat. But but we're still, I mean, we have people that we make copies for, they send it and we run it out and they give us the payment. And we did that before.
Yes.
So it's not a new thing for us. I wanted to go back to the mobile app real quick. So is there, I guess the part of being able to link an entire family, you know, is there any chapter 43 implications, like, you know?
Yes, there is. And thank you for raising that, because I don't know how we would prevent a parent from linking to their child's record. I mean, that's something that we talked about, but still, there's still bugs in that anyway. So I don't know how or what we could do to prevent that. So if the parent doesn't have the child's barcode number or library card, then they can't, because in order to link to them, you have to scan their barcode.
I mean, at Ryo, we're so small, we struggle with that whole chapter 43, because it's just a different kind of world that I'm used to my prior two libraries, and I'm having to be a lot more flexible. But I also know with like that tweener teens, you know, we have a hard enough time getting them to look at books, but they're not, it's, I guess I'm thinking of, you know, the books on suicide, sexual orientation. You know, that they're going to not want to look at those books or check them out, or, you know, so I'm just curious. Thank you.
And thank you for reminding us of that. So we're all going to get kicked out again.
Thank you.
Nice to see your faces.
Thank you.
Except for those of you who never did the video.